Today is April 28th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Apple Inc. announced on Wednesday results for its second fiscal quarter, which ended in March 2007. The news came in the usual conference call with analysts, and we have full coverage of the topics discussed. You can find those articles in our show notes. And we'll talk about some of the relevant topics in our context machine. But first, Ricky, why don't you give us the numbers?
Apple's revenue was $5.26 billion U.S. The quarterly profit was $770 million. This is a record for the March quarter. Results were ahead of consensus estimates for revenue and well ahead of estimates of earnings. The reason profits exceeded estimates more than the revenue was due to improvements in gross margins for the quarter. The company shipped 1.5 million Macs and 10.5 million iPods.
Now, among the sources of Apple's success, continuing lead in the portable media player market. Apple sold 10.5 million iPods, which was 24% more than the same quarter last year. And here's the global picture. In the United States, the iPod holds about 70% of the market. In Australia and Canada, the number comes in at about 60%. In Japan and Hong Kong, the iPod holds a little bit less than 50%. The United Kingdom, Switzerland, and Singapore, they have about 40% of the market, and the iPod holds 28% of the German market.
Apple's surprisingly high profits were enabled by surprisingly high margins, like I said, 35% rather than closer to the usual number, which is around 30%. The higher margins were possible because of dropping component prices, including lower memory, LCD and processor prices. Intel, for example, cut the price on its mainstream Core 2 Duo chips, which are used in a lot of the different Macs, by about 40%.
And also of interest to Apple watchers, the company's stock rose after the earnings call, which isn't normal. In pre-market trading on Thursday, it actually broke $104, that's U.S. dollars, and Apple stock closed the week at $99.92.
There were also real developments for Apple in the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's options probe. Apple Inc. itself will face no penalties, thanks to its thorough and swift cooperation with the investigation. However, the SEC filed charges against former Apple General Counsel Nancy Heinen on Tuesday. The SEC alleges that Ms. Heinen participated in fraudulent activities that caused Apple to underreport company expenses to the tune of about $40 million. The SEC claims that Ms. Heinen was involved in several improper backdating incidents. The commission accused her of falsifying documents so Apple would not have to report certain expenses. They also said she signed fictitious documents from a board meeting that never occurred in order to issue grants to CEO Steve Jobs at a more favorable price. The commission is also seeking injunctive relief, disgorgement, and monetary penalties against Heinen, along with an order barring her from serving as an officer or director of a public company. Miles Ehrlich from Ms. Heinen's legal team stated, "It's simply unfair to single out Nancy Heinen for enforcement action from among the thousands of executives in hundreds of companies all over this country who have been swept up in these options cases." Ms. Heinen plans to fight the charges against her in court.
Now, the other former Apple officer, ex-CFO Fred Anderson, reached a settlement agreement with the SEC. They charged him and then dismissed the charges as part of the settlement. And part of the deal, Mr. Anderson agreed to pay back $3.5 million in option grants along with a $150,000 fine. Mr. Anderson will not be barred from serving as a corporate officer or as a board member on publicly traded companies, and he will not be required to admit that he violated any laws or regulations.
And I was just writing the text to put this story to bed on the show this week, and then Mr. Anderson spoke out.
Yes, he did. In a statement issued by his attorney, Mr. Anderson claimed that he advised Steve Jobs that proper procedures must be followed when changing option dates. The statement claims that in late January 2001, Mr. Jobs told Mr. Anderson that Apple's board of directors had approved an executive team grant on January 2nd. Mr. Anderson, quote, cautioned Mr. Jobs that the executive team grant would have to be priced based on the date of the actual Byrd agreement, or there could be an accounting charge. Now, he also told Mr. Jobs, here's another quote, that the board would have to confirm its prior approval in a legally satisfactory method. The statement then claims that Mr. Anderson, and here's one more quote for you, was told by Mr. Jobs that the board had given its prior approval and the board would verify it.
One more piece of fodder before we get into the context machine. In an uncharacteristic move on this topic, Apple Inc.'s board of directors responded to Mr. Anderson's accusations, and the board said in a statement that Apple will not enter into a debate with Mr. Anderson or his attorneys over Mr. Jobs' involvement in the backdating issue. The statement from the board members Bill Campbell, Millard Drexler, Al Gore, the former VP of the U.S., Arthur Levinson, Eric Schmidt of Google, Jerry York, that is the Apple board right there, stated in part that Steve Jobs cooperated fully with Apple's independent investigation and with the government's investigation of stop option grants at Apple. The SEC investigated the matter thoroughly, and its complaint speaks for itself in terms of what it says, what it does not say, who it charges, and who it does not charge. And with all the he said, she said out of the way from that story, we're going to get back to the stock options probe in the second half of the context machine. But a lot of news this week. So, Jeff,
holy
let's start.
Crap, what a week.
Stuff from everywhere. Let's start a little bit with the earnings report. In your opinion, what's the biggest news from the earnings report?
For me, there's a couple big things that come out of it. First is that Mac sales went up and substantially, which is a really good thing, and it shows that the Mac is strong, even with a delay in Leopard, even though we had to wait for Adobe Creative Suite 3 to come out, even though Windows Vista was coming out, the Mac was still holding its own. That was big news to me. The other big news was the quarterly profit, $770 million. Holy crap, how'd they manage that? I thought that was big news, and a lot of that comes down to the fact that Apple was able to get really good pricing on components, and they had strong Mac sales.
So they were selling the Mac sales are higher margin than the iPods, for example. One of the reasons, presumably, that the gross margins are up, and then these dropping component prices. A lot of the analysts, as I understand it, are saying these component prices are not going to stay so low going forward. So presumably this is not a permanent change, but $770 million, that is, was that a record profit or was that a record profit for this quarter?
I'd have to go back and check, but I believe it's a record profit for this quarter.
All right. Now let's talk a little bit about Leopard. We haven't talked on this show at all about the Leopard release delay, and there are some issues that go into that. We've had some listeners write us and say, well, how do you think about this, the setting of priorities, putting the iPhone ahead of Leopard? We'll discuss that maybe in a bit. But let's talk first of all about how it applies to the earnings discussion and how it applies to the dollars and cents. Leopard will not come out until October. So how is that affecting or how is that expected to affect Apple's financials?
It's probably going to hold back Mac sales a little bit. And I think we actually saw that some this quarter. Had Leopard shipped, we would have seen even higher Mac sales numbers. However, I think the bigger thing that was holding back Mac sales overall was the pending release of Adobe Creative Suite 3, which can run natively on Intel processor Macs. And so we didn't see as much of an impact on Mac sales because of the Leopard delay as we would have, save that Creative Suite 3 came out and in essence saved the day on that one. But once Leopard ships, I think that we're going to see another surge in Mac sales.
It is interesting. In the past, there have been occasions before an OS X release where Apple has said, we know that this is our release date. They announce the release date for the product, and then they say, anyone that buys a Mac between now and that release date can get a free upgrade, which presumably they do as a way to convince people to not delay their purchases. similar thing happened with a lot of Windows machines in, you know, around the Christmas holiday. A lot of places were offering free upgrades to Windows Vista when Vista came out at the end of January. Is there any, I mean, obviously we don't know, but it, does that seem, is there any reason why that might specifically not happen here?
I'd be kind of surprised if it didn't happen. Well, okay, actually, I'm really on the fence on this one. What I would like to see happen is that Apple at some point between now or between June and October says, okay, here's what we're going to do. If you go ahead and buy your Mac now, when Leopard ships for $20, which is what they've done in the past, we will send you the upgrade DVD. And so your machine will have Leopard just like you had planned when you thought you're going to be able to purchase a new Mac with it pre-installed in June. So I think that's likely to be the case. But I don't think that they will announce that until probably Developers Conference. And if they don't do that, I'll be a little bit surprised. But on the other hand, they might be thinking, okay, well, it's far enough out. This is something people can plan for a little bit better. But on the other hand, they've been planning on this for like 18 months now. So it would be the right thing to do.
All right. Now let's talk about the iPhone. Again, keeping this is kind of the other half of the Leopard discussion because there's this issue of how resources are being allocated at Apple. But let's, again, focus on how the iPhone is expected to affect the bottom line. What is the discussion from the earnings call? What's the discussion? What's the conventional wisdom about how the iPhone is going to affect financials?
Okay, I'm going to change the first answer I gave you, which was, what's the big news out of the earnings report? Here's another big piece of news out of the earnings report. The iPhone and Apple TV are going to be accounted for using a subscription accounting system, which means that Apple is going to collect, you know, like the $500 for an iPhone at the time of the sale, but then amortize it out over 24 months. So what we're going to see is that Apple's bottom line stays the same, but the month-to-month earnings will look a little bit lower. And the really big news behind that to me is that what it means is that these devices are not locked in as what they are. So like when you go out and buy a cell phone today, if you want to have the cool features that come out next, you have to go buy a new phone. And with the iPhone, that's not going to be the case. What's going to happen is Apple's going to provide you the updates for free. And that's a really big thing because that means your cell phone isn't locked in at a static point in the whole evolution of technology.
So it sounds to me, this was a very interesting and confusing, I think, confounding part of the discussion from the financials, this idea of accounting for the revenue due to both Apple TV and the iPhone as subscription. One would initially say, well, they've got the cash. Why don't they just say, we've got the cash? The only way I can parse it, and maybe you've heard another explanation or have a better one, the only way I can parse the reason to do this is that they're effectively saying, all right, we get $500, but we think it's going to be distracting to shareholders or it's going to be confusing for people trying to understand our revenue if we just say, hey, we got all that $500 in this quarter and we're rich this quarter. And then next quarter, when they're not selling a new iPhone and people aren't rushing out to go and buy it, their earnings crash and people say, what happened? The company's going under. So instead, what they're doing is accounting for this money over time in a way that will help level out their revenue. And in that way, they're essentially using the money from the iPhone and they're accounting for it in a way that recognizes that they're going to be siphoning that money, that earnings, in order to do further R&D. Is that how you're reading this, or is there another way to explain why they would go about doing this?
Okay, that's not how I'm reading it. However, I think that's totally plausible, except that you won't see that leveling out this year. That will be in future quarters. So in 2008, I think we'll see that leveling out because the big surge of iPhone buyers will have already happened, and then you just have the steady stream of new buyers. So that's totally plausible. But what I think is going on, do you remember when Apple said, hey, we need to charge you for that 802.11n update for your shiny new MacBook Pro? I think that's what's going on here. Instead of doing the accounting thing where they had to charge for a new feature on an already shipping product, they're accounting for all those updates and new features by amortizing the cost out over a 24-month period. So what they can say is, well, you know, this is still being paid for. It's not a fully shipped product sort of thing. And that way we can provide these updates for free instead of having to charge for each one.
Ah, I see. And I hadn't thought of that. Now, I'm curious, and I imagine some of the listeners are curious. I don't know if you know the answer to this. When the iPod was first released, there were a series of updates to that that added new functionality. For example, there was an iPod, and I'm not going to remember the generations of it, but I'm pretty sure that there was a type of iPod that shipped where you had no control over what showed up on the first menu. And then they shipped an iPod update later on, a software update that was free for iPod users that enabled that, being able to choose what was on the main menu. I think that this is true. And so that there are some features that have shown up over time on the iPod. Are those considered not really new features, or have something about the laws changed in the intervening years? Do you have any idea?
Here's a perfect example of what you're talking about. You remember when Apple added on the volume limiter to the iPod?
Yeah.
That was released as a software update, and that's a new feature. Excuse me. Now, I think that that either someone is interpreting the law differently or the law may have changed. And we're not going to see things like that anymore.
All right. So I guess what this means is, folks, if anyone out there knows the legal distinctions that are being made now, we'd be very curious to get your opinion. Send an email or send an audio comment. We'd be happy to pass that along to everyone. But yeah, so is it possible then that maybe the higher-end iPod revenue will be counted in the same way?
I don't think so. I think that the iPod... the standard iPod, not the iPhone, iPod, smartphone combo products, but I think the standard iPod media player products will still be accounted for in the same way. And I think that's because the device itself is fundamentally different. When you're dealing with an iPod, you have this, it's a very limited operating system designed to perform very specific functions. When you look at what you have with the iPhone and the Apple TV, you're running a Mac OS X platform device, and that's a much more open system overall, even though someone's going to send in an email saying, no, Jeff, it's not open because Apple isn't letting anyone add software to the iPhone. But what I'm talking about is because it's a full-on operating system, there's a lot more you can do with it. There's a lot more features that can be added to it. And so I think we'll see a distinction between accounting methods for the devices because of that.
And also presumably because the iPhone is simply a newer product. People are it's newer. And so there's going to be more churn in the feature requests and the things that people are looking for as they kind of sort out how the product is going to work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's deal very quickly with this one question I mentioned before. Give me the 60-second summary on your opinion. So there's a conventional wisdom out there, and it's based on this announcement that Apple made about delaying Leopard in order to release the iPhone on time. And there's been all this hubbub and discussion on the internet about whether that means that Apple is prioritizing the iPhone first and whether that means that they're abandoning the Mac OS, or whether this is a good idea because the iPhone is a new product and it has to be released on time, or because Leopard is, you know, it's a total mess and it's going to be a train wreck like Vista, or maybe what they're trying to do is put on all the finishing touches so that everything is perfect before it releases. Everyone has an opinion on what happened here. Backing away from that, what is the calculation that you think Apple is making here in prioritizing the finishing of the iPhone before the finishing of Leopard? Whether or not it's a good idea or good for Apple users or anybody else, what is the calculation that Apple has made here?
Without passing judgment, what I think the logic behind all of this was looking at where the biggest impact would be for a delay and avoiding that impact. And in this case, it's not just Apple saying, oh, we're going to have to push our operating system out a little bit. When you're looking at the iPhone, it's we have partners lined up, we have commitments, we have customers. This is a different market. We're pushing a product like this out a little bit longer simply isn't going to work because there's other things that have to line up and go into place for a cell phone type product like this to roll out. And this is a deadline that would be very bad to miss because it messes up all these other time schedules. And it's Apple's big grand jump into this market, and jumping in late would look really bad for Apple. So they pushed Leopard out. And if you look at the logic or what's going on with that, look at it as Apple is pushing Leopard out another 4 months, and they're going to be releasing macOS 10.5. Microsoft pushed Longhorn out 5 years, and they released Windows Vista. I'm not really worried about the Leopard delay.
All right. And then one last question about financials here. You know, and the listeners know that I like to go on about price targets occasionally. There are two price targets out there, and I'm pretty sure they're from Shawu of American Technology Research and Gene Munster of Piper Jaffray. But there are these two price targets, and I think they're, and I forget which goes with which, at about $130 and $140.
Yeah, someone's going to correct us, I'm sure. But I think Gene Munster is $133 and Shawu's $140.
All right.
So, and someone may fix us on that if I'm wrong. And whether or not they can actually, or Apple can actually hit those numbers today, I don't know. I'd like to think they could, because for anyone that's holding Apple stock, that would be a great thing. And I'm not holding Apple stock, so all right. But I think these numbers are totally dependent on the performance of iPhone, Apple TV, and Macintosh. And if you notice, I didn't say iPod. Because the iPod is already doing really well. These are the new products and the growing product with the Macintosh that are going to keep the momentum going and grow Apple's value.
All right.
So we'll see if they hit that.
We'll see. And the real question, again, for the people keeping score at home, these price targets are 12-month price targets. So the relevant question is, 12 months from today, do you think that this is going to be the price of Apple stock? Let us know. Let us send us an email, roundup@macobserver.com. Let us know what you think about that. I think it's kind of funny. I will be very surprised if 12 months from today, the stock price is $130. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Keep in mind, I'm not a stock analyst in any way. I have to use a calculator to make sure I do a tip right at a restaurant. But my guess is that Apple stock will not hit this in 12 months because it's going to split before then and it's going to have to build back up.
All right. And of course, in that case, presumably the price targets themselves would be split. But in fairness, that is
right.
Yeah. All right. Let's switch gears a little bit. Talk just for a few minutes about the stock options probe, because again, we can't say what's going to happen here, but I want to make sure that people kind of are aware of what's going on like this. So the first question is the most basic one. Is this thing open and shut, Jeff, or are we still going to be talking about this on a future show?
We're going to be talking about this next year. How's that for a prediction?
And why are we going to be talking about this next year?
Well, once we finish up with all the civil-related things, which is what the Securities and Exchange Commission is dealing with, I think we will likely be dealing with the federal criminal cases or case, whatever, that come out of this. And so that means we'll be dealing with stuff next year sometime as well.
All right. And the relevant questions here, I think the interesting questions, and I'll just list them. why would Fred Anderson make a statement like he did that points to Steve Jobs? Again, that's a question that's really hard to answer. Is Steve Jobs safe? Again, something to which we don't know the answer. Nancy Heinen, looks like she's going to get hit pretty hard by this. And there's a question of whether or not that's fair. Again, very difficult to know the answer to that without knowing all the inner workings at Apple and who said what to whom in the smoke-filled back room. And then the last question that I think some people are probably curious about is anyone going to jail here? Let's start with that last one. Do we have any reason to think that anyone's going to jail?
It's possible. Whether or not that actually happens, we'll have to wait and see. That'll be something we'll be talking about next year. It's a possibility, but right now we have to keep in mind that we have a wild card loose cannon player in this soap opera. And by the way, you can't write drama this good. It just has to happen. We have Nancy Heinen, and she's the player in this big drama that has nothing to lose because she's already screwed. So she can go in swinging, and it doesn't matter what happens. All she needs to do is figure out who she can take down with her. And
demonstrate that it was not that she is not the one fundamentally responsible for this, that there is presumably a bigger fish who is giving the orders.
Right. Now, my guess is that the SEC does not believe her, because if they did, I think that we would have seen other people named in the civil actions that they're taking. And we saw two people, one of whom settled. So now the spotlight is on Nancy.
And so presumably,
which she doesn't like.
And presumably that would have meant some sort of either a plea bargain or a deal of some kind where she said, look, I'll admit that I did these things and I'm going to testify against somebody else, some bigger fish.
Right. And so she isn't doing that for whatever reason. It could also be that the SEC was going to offer her a deal, and she laid out her cards on the table, and they went, yeah, no, that's not good enough. And so they withdrew their deal, and now she's stuck where she is, which then brings us to the next part, where we have Fred Anderson making this surprise statement, and Apple, the board of directors, doing something very uncharacteristic and responding to it. Although, in fairness, they responded to say they're not responding. Go Apple. And in both cases, my guess is that this is legal posturing on the part of Fred Anderson and on the part of Apple, because they both sides know that Nancy could say anything in court, and they're trying to set up their defenses ahead of time. Now, I'm not saying that Fred Anderson lied in any way when he made the statement, and I don't think Apple is lying either. It's in both sides' best interest to be telling the truth and to have told the truth all along, because at any point, if it comes out that either side withheld information or lied, someone's going to jail, and none of these people want that, except for Nancy. She wants anyone to go down to protect herself.
All right. So the last relevant question, I think, just for the people who want to follow this at home and have some idea of what the stakes are, the SEC is seeking monetary penalties and then two other things, injunctive relief and disgorgement, which particularly disgorgement sounds quite exciting.
Indeed.
Can you give us monetary penalties? Presumably pretty clear. Fred Anderson, for example, had to pay that $150,000 fine. But what are injunctive relief and disgorgement?
Okay. Well, it involves ritualistic sacrifice, bloodletting, and black robes.
Perfect.
Perfect. Okay. Actually, injunctive relief. That's the part of the case where the SEC wants to bar Ms. Heinen from serving on public boards, being a corporate officer. That's the injunctive relief part. So they're asking for an injunction from the court system to prohibit her from performing those duties in the future. So that's injunctive relief.
All right.
And then disgorgement has nothing to do with eating. It's actually a term that relates to a procedure that the SEC can request, which is to force someone, to compel them to repay back any of the profits that they made from illegal activities in their job. So in this case, the disgorgement would be Nancy Heinen has to repay all the money that she got from these improperly backdated stock option grants that were awarded to her.
All right. So if we compare this to Fred Anderson's settlement, he paid back. He was disgorged of $3.5 million, like we said before.
Right.
And he had monetary penalties of $150,000, but he was not subject to injunctive relief. He is still allowed to serve as a public officer.
Exactly.
All right. And that's going to be the context machine. Again, folks, if you have thoughts, if you have questions, if you have clarifications, or if you want to tell us that we got something wrong in here, let us know. Roundup@MacObserver.com. And that's it for the context machine.
Well, there you go. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
Our content, of course, is written by the staff of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO Podcast and Portable Media Expo coming up in September. We got links all over TMO, and that's all I've got.
And since you're already listening, you might as well stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online. Cheers.